Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy, good to have you here with us. It's been a couple crazy weeks on the road, and we're getting ready for our first ever audience trip to Sweetens Cove. That starts on Friday officially, getting Thursday to Chattanooga. Very, very excited about it. A lot going on, but we want to talk today about a little bit about the FedEx Cup playoffs, what's happened in the last couple of weeks, and then kind of set the stage a little bit for the Tour Championship this week. Before we do all that usual spiel, you can get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service and the handle Golf News Net. We are found on Amazon Fire TV and Roku TV boxes, and you can read all of our work at golfnewsnet.com. So, as I mentioned, I've been in Myrtle Beach, been doing some other traveling. It's kind of been a little bit crazy. I mean, it's been a weird year this year, in part because I've done a fair amount of travel, not nearly as much as usual, some more scheduled in the fall, but have just a whole lot of obligations around GNN, of course. And my wife's done a whole bunch of traveling this year. It's kind of a new wrinkle in things. And as my kids get older, it's definitely more difficult to find 30 minutes to record the podcast and another 15, 20 minutes just to get it all together and done right so that we get it up on the site. And so one of the big things I'm trying to find time to do is to reset my circadian rhythm, because I wanted to shoot more video. I want to do one video a day. And ideally, I would love to actually do a kind of semi-daily version of this podcast, not the 19th Hole Golf Show, but a show that's just kind of 15, 20 minutes, catching up on a couple topics, here's what's going on in the world, for a commute podcast, basically. And so that's one of my goals for now as we get into almost September, is to kind of reset that rhythm a little bit, because Golf News Net's doing pretty well. It's going well this year. It's up like 25-30%. Hoping for 50, but hey, I will still take a very good year. I will not kick it in the mouth. And we continue to grow throughout this part of the year against last year, so you never know where we end up the year. But I figured out how to make a comfortable living doing this, which is great. Golf Trip X is doing well. We'll continue to grow that. We may do an equipment site next year, kind of weighing that a little bit. But the kind of day-to-day of how I run the site is, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's set in stone. It's really not that difficult to do anymore. It's kind of out of memory, to be honest with you. And so I want to make sure that I'm still challenging myself. I'm still kind of coming up with new ways to talk about golf and experience golf and interact with you about golf. And so still trying to figure out how to make all that work. But one of the things I do want to do this week before I get out of here is order a new podcast microphone. I have used this Yamaha mixing board that I'm looking at right now in my basement, at my office, for probably 9 years now. And it's been serviceable. It's always been good. Connected via USB. That was why I bought it. I've had the same microphone for that amount of time. I think I've changed the batteries once or twice in 9 or 10 years. That's how good of a microphone it is. And it just has always kind of served me well. But at this point, the technology has improved, things are better. Frankly, it just doesn't sound as good as it used to. And so I'm going to get a traditional podcast mic. I have a headset mic I've always liked to use, but I kind of want to use a kind of old-timey radio-style mic that'll catch more sound a little bit better, won't have to speak directly into it, so you kind of hear every little piece of spittle that comes out of my mouth. So that's coming. Looking forward to improving the audio of the podcast. And I hope that that'll work out a little bit better for this show and then for also future shows. The FedEx Cup playoffs they're such an interesting thing to me. They've been around, this is the 13th year of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We've had a bunch of different formats. I believe this is the fourth different format for the FedEx Cup starting this year, because now we have three events instead of four. This is the first year of that. The playoff events are still worth quadruple a regular PGA Tour event. That's been consistent as a format basically since 2009. But they have now kind of changed things up a little bit, where they've gone from four events to three, and the standings after the BMW Championship, the top 30 in order, are assigned strokes for the Tour Championship as handicap based upon their ranking, and that gives them their starting position before a 72-hole tournament starts. And then at the end of it all, they'll add the starting strokes and the 72-hole tournament golf strokes, and whoever has the best score in relationship to par wins the whole thing. They win the FedEx Cup. They win the Tour Championship. That's considered an official win. And they get the FedEx Cup bonus pool top prize, which is now $15 million. It used to be 10, now it's 15. The minimum for finishing this week in 30th place is, I think, $393,000. So basically, you're going to make about $400,000 just for getting here. And I think that's incredible. I mean, I think that's amazing. That's the biggest payday by far in golf. It's not even close. There will be a European Tour event this year. Their season finale, they've changed their final series a little bit so that the winner of the final few events will get, I believe it's $3 million in South Africa, and then I think it's $5 million in Dubai. It's pretty wild. I'm actually looking forward to it because of that huge jump in pay from second to first. It's going to be kind of a wild thing to consider. But I guess the hope from the PGA Tour was that when FedEx re-upped as the title of the FedEx Cup, they would inject more money. They did that. They're getting more say. They got that. They got a World Golf Championships event out of it in Memphis now. And they, I think, hoped that fans would find it more interesting because they're playing for more money. And I think that's the whole great logical fallacy of the playoffs, is that the tour has long tried to equate, frankly, tried to diminish, not equate, tried to diminish the value of the money. Even though that's clearly what all of this is. This is about money. It's not about being the best golfer all year. It's not about being the best golfer of the year, because that's largely determined by the majors and the players. It's got nothing to do with all of that. It doesn't. It has to do with doling out millions of dollars to golfers who would otherwise not play this time of year, who would not play after the majors are over, except when they felt like it, to keep form up. And so the PGA Tour has to keep up this concept of a season, and they realized, you know, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, hey, if we do this series of playoffs and end the season with them, then we won't have, or we will effectively end the season with them, because the season didn't end with the playoffs until, I believe, 2013. But the concept was, all right, well, we'll keep more players playing in high-quality events if we just lure them in with money, because that's all we've got. Can't make majors up. They've got the players. That's as close to a major as it's going to get, at least in public perspective. The players themselves consider it a major championship, and that's not going to change. You're not just going to invent other ways to keep players in. You can't. There's just, that doesn't exist, and they're afraid of competing against football, so they figure, look, we'll just throw a shootload of money. I wanted to say something else. Shootload of money at the players, and there's no reason they can't play. There's no way they won't play for that kind of money. And they're right. I mean, players have. I mean, the fields have been tremendous for the four FedEx Cup playoff events, and now for the three. They're very, very good. They're better than pretty much every European Tour event. They're better than many WGCs. They're great. It's great to have that kind of golf this time of year. But making someone care about the FedEx Cup is totally different than appreciating that we've got good golf with deep fields in late August now. It used to be September. Now, late August. And I come into this week kind of apprehensive because we've got this handicap system. Justin Thomas won the BMW Championship. He is now the number one seed. He starts the tournament, before the tournament starts, before he hits a shot on Thursday, he is 10 under par. Patrick Cantlay, second. Finished second in the tournament. Finished second in the standings. He starts the tournament at 8 under par. Then you go down 7-6-5 for the top 5 players. Kind of similar to the old system where if you won the Tour Championship, then you won the FedEx Cup based on points. So that still kind of holds. And then in groups of 5, you have different levels of strokes. So there are 6 groups of 5, right? So for the remaining 5 groups, you're 4, 3, 2, 1, and even in groups of 5. So players who come into the Tour Championship just squeaking in, ranked 26th through 30th, have to overcome a 10-shot deficit over Justin Thomas before anything ever starts to win the Tour Championship and therefore win the FedEx Cup. It's, in one sense, I think it's a great idea because it takes away the points. You don't need the whiteboard. You don't need the projection. You don't need what the number would be versus what it is. None of that. That all goes away. And you can just say, all right, this person is winning this thing, this tournament, I guess. And that determines who wins the FedEx Cup. There's no official purse this week. The winner does get an official win. for official World Golf ranking purposes, they have a separate way of tracking who wins those world ranking points. So it behooves you to win the 72-hole tournament without the strokes because you get world ranking points. And that's the way they're going to determine it. So regardless of where you start, regardless of your head start, how you play in those 72 holes against the other 29 players, that tally will determine who wins what in terms of world ranking points. It's an important thing to keep in mind this week, and I think players will know that because they have reason to play for it. Even if they can't win the FedEx Cup, even if they can't overcome a 10-9-8-7 stroke deficit, if they win the tournament as a 72-hole event, they still get a boatload of world ranking points. Now, they get in by getting into the Tour Championship, you get into three of the four majors for next year. You get into the Masters, you get into the U.S. Open, and the Open. You effectively get into the PGA Championship based on their points list. Not exactly, but pretty darn close. So you're probably going to be in all four majors next year. If you're not, it's criminal. And so, but getting those world ranking points, that could get you into the top 50. There are only a couple players in this field that aren't in the top 50. I think two or three that aren't in the top 50 in the world. That could get you in the top 50 in the world. That gets you into other events. That gets you into invitationals. I mean, you're basically getting into everything next year by getting in the top 30, but this could lock you up a spot in the WGC match play, for example. That would be a good thing. Stuff like that. So there's still things to play for this week, even if you have this enormous deficit and you think it's pretty much impossible to make it up in 72 holes, which, by the way, it's not. I don't think that it is. The Tour has modeled this out based on the old point system. And remember, 1 year, when we had Bill Haas win this thing, he was number 25 when he won. So just keep that in mind. It has happened from deep in the past. Now that would mean someone who is ranked 25th would have to overcome a 9-shot deficit at the start of the tournament to win the FedEx Cup. Kind of crazy. The playoff format, by the way, just in case you're curious, because it may come to that, is just sudden death. It's just like a regular golf tournament. At that point, it is sudden death for the FedEx Cup. I kind of hope it gets to that, because I think that would be really fascinating to see how guys deal with the prospect of winning $15 million in a sudden death playoff. Because when Bill Haas did it, 2010? When Bill Haas did it, he really didn't have any idea that he was going to win both. That he knew he could win the Tour Championship, and that was a lot of money, and so he was playing for that. He didn't realize that if he won the playoff, he would then win the FedEx Cup and the $10 million that goes with it. So it was kind of a little bit of willful ignorance, maybe just not knowing the math or whatever. It's fine. But he didn't know all that was riding on it. Now, if you have a playoff, you know what's on the line. $15 million, $14 million in your pocket, and $1 million deferred. Right away, it's done and dusted. That's a lot to consider. It really is. And I think even for guys like Brooks Koepka and Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy, who are worth insane amounts of money, who have done tremendously well on and off the golf course, you tell them you can win $15 million with one good hole, it's going to raise the blood pressure. It's going to raise the heartbeat a little bit. So I'm very curious how that will all pan out here. Obviously, the $10 million thing, I don't think it was really apparent to a lot of players. You know, the pressure was a little bit different because in a number of cases, the guy who won the FedEx Cup was not the guy who won the Tour Championship. The guys that were in the top five didn't always win the season finale and therefore win the whole season-long thing. But so they weren't as cognizant of the math. Now it's very obvious. So I think that'll be an interesting added wrinkle. I don't know if it's going to go well. I don't know if fans will like the handicapping system. I mean, I think it simplifies the matter, and I think the Tour studied it enough to know they're not really doing anything different than what they were doing with the points. It's just instead of points, they're strokes. That's fine. But I'm very interested how it will be received, especially now being at the end of August. It's going to be really freaking hot in Atlanta, I'm sure. It always is in August. I'm sure it's going to be like 100 degrees with 200% humidity. It probably will not be all that enjoyable to watch in terms of being in person. But watching on TV, you guys playing for $15 million with a simplified system, maybe it'll work out. Holding out the jury on it. But my bigger gripe is that this system is not a playoff. We've called this the FedEx Cup playoffs for however many years now. It's not a playoff. It's never been a playoff. It's not going to be a playoff as it's currently constructed. We have 125 players make the playoffs. 125. and 125 of them used to be eliminated to 100, which was basically nothing. And then you eliminate to 70 to 30. Now we have bigger eliminations, right? We have 125 down to 70. That's 55 players. That's important. That's a big deal. And then from 70 to 30, so we're eliminating 95 players through two tournaments. Now we're kind of getting somewhere. We're still using this point system that you kind of, it just anchors too much to the prior, 40 weeks of golf. And then you come here to these playoffs, and you can move up and down, don't get me wrong, but not many players move in and out of those cut lines. You know, three players move from the top 70, outside the top 30 last week at Medina, into the top 30. That's it. Three players. So, not much volatility there. 10% of the ending field, if you look at the total field, less than 5% of the total field moved in and out. Or moved in. I mean, six players, obviously, moved in and out total, because you have to have double that number. So, even still, less than 10% of the field moved. That's not a playoff system. That's not how playoffs work. Playoffs have dramatic changes. They have kind of sort of advantage, but they're not real advantages, and they can be overcome. You don't have that. And for years, I've tried to come up with ideas that might make it seem like a real playoff, that might make it boil down to just something really simple to understand. And the tour has always been dead set on this idea of trying to keep their stars in play. So it's not really a playoff. Call it the finals. Call it the PGA Tour finals or the FedEx Cup finals. Kind of like they do with the Korn Ferry Tour. Because no one thinks they're playoffs on the Korn Ferry Tour. You just think, okay, well, if you finish in the top five of any event, you get your card. And if you have a good finish in two of them, then you definitely get your card. And that's fine. People are fine with that. But the second you attach the playoff label, there's certain expectations. So if we're going to stick with the playoff moniker, I would like to see the idea of shortening the field dramatically. Basically, make the Wyndham Championship a de facto playoff event. Don't call it the playoff event. Don't call it. That's fine. But say, okay, the top 125 maintain their status for next year. Cool, everything's great. You're going to get paid off on being in the bonus pool if you get in the top 125. By the way, they pay out to the top 150. So even if you don't make the playoffs, you can still get some buku bucks for doing nothing. I think it's $70,000 for finishing in the top 126 to 150 figure. You still get paid. That's something you need to consider as a fan. That's crazy. But let's say Wyndham Championship, we're going to settle the Wyndham Rewards top 10. I know, another money grab, and basically nobody at the top showed up because it was all done and dusted. It was decided Brooks Koepka was going to win, and the only guy who was going to get him didn't bother to play. So, not really a good idea. So, we need to come up with a way to make the Wyndham more important. Well, let's say Wyndham Rewards top 10, if you want to win that bonus pool, you got to play the Wyndham. End of story. That's it. If you don't play it, you don't get the money. It goes down to the next person. You want that? No? Maybe? Okay. Then, on the other end, the top 125 is the cutoff. Always has been the cutoff. It's fine to remain the cutoff, but that's for a PGA Tour status. That's PGA Tour cards. You want to get in the playoffs? You got to finish in the top 80. And we'll knock it down to the 80 players that qualify for a no-cut event. We'll call it 81. Whatever. They like that number because you can do threesomes. The top 81 players will qualify, or 78. That's a good number, too, will qualify for the Northern Trust. No cut. Everyone plays. Play it out. And then, after four rounds, the top, 50 players move on to the next stage. They move on to the BMW Championship. And then, at top 50, then we have a cut down to the final. We can do 30, I guess, if you have to. But down to a number, a lower number for the Tour Championship. And then we just play the Tour Championship. And whoever wins, wins. That's it. There's no advantage. There's no extra home court thing. None of that. It is a playoff system. If you don't win in the playoffs or you don't succeed in the playoffs, you lose. It doesn't matter what you did in the regular season. That's how it works in every other sport, basically. If you don't succeed, you fail. And I know that seems kind of simplistic, but I think it would be really easy to understand. And the eliminations would seem more brutal. It would seem more important what is happening at the Northern Trust, what is happening at the BMW, and certainly more what is happening at the Tour Championship. Because it would be plain as day for everybody. Here's the cutoff. Here's where you lose. Here's where you make money. Here's how you win. And I think that's just the simplest way forward to do it. but obviously we'll see how this handicap system works out, that it was obviously cleared with FedEx before the PGA Tour announced it. I don't know if the fans will embrace it or not. We will find that out too. But I always try to think of this. How can it be more like actual playoffs? And if we just want to get rid of the idea of a playoff, just call it the finals, embrace it for the money grab that it is, and just go forward with it. And let's have some fun. But don't make it seem like it's the biggest prize in golf. It's not. It doesn't reward season-long. It doesn't reward anything for being great for the entire season. I mean, it gives you some advantage, but not necessarily. Because the majors don't have the importance they probably should relative to the other tournaments in the eyes of the players. It's because the PGA Tour doesn't control that. The players get maybe too much importance compared to the majors. The WGCs get too much importance compared to regular PGA Tour events. Opposite field events probably get, frankly, too many points compared to regular PGA Tour events. So it all is convoluted. None of it would make sense to someone who is objectively developing a system that would identify the best player at the end of the season before the playoffs. Just wouldn't happen this way. So let's have some fun with it, embrace it as a money grab, and let's go get some cash. Let's go get that bread, you know? Let's do it. All right, I'm going to take a quick break for a second. I want to tell you about a new partner of ours, new advertiser who we're working with this month and hopefully in future months, is Sagely Naturals. So you may have been as interested as I was when you tuned into the Masters or maybe your social media feed and you saw someone wondering aloud, or you saw yourself wondering if Phil Mickelson was dropping some CBD oil in his mouth at Augusta National. And then when Tiger Woods was chewing gum at the Masters, something he doesn't really do, CBD oil gum. It drew a lot of attention. And in the recent months after, a number of players, including Bubba Watson, probably the most high-profile player, have signed endorsement deals with CBD companies. And CBD has become kind of a hot product. It is a derivative of hemp. It doesn't have the same high-inducing components as the THC that's found in hemp and marijuana, but it has in CBD kind of pain-relieving components that help you kind of reduce your anxiety or help quell pain and overall just kind of make you feel better. And so I was approached by a company called Sagely Naturals, and they asked me if I would give a try to some CBD products and see if I like them. And so I've tried them, and I got to tell you, I was skeptical, but they're pretty damn good. I have to admit, I had a hangover after a day of golf and a night of drinking. They sent me one of those kind of roller things that, if you've used Icy Hot in the past, had a roller, rolled it on my head, on my temples. I kid you not, within 5 minutes, my headache was gone. 5 minutes. And I've used their creams. They have pills, creams, rub ones, different ways to apply the CBD. It's infused with natural elements that smell really good. So there's eucalyptus in some. So it doesn't smell funky. It smells kind of invigorating, to be honest, if you're into the aromatherapy thing. And they work. I mean, that's all I can tell you is they work. And they're reasonably priced. You can get them anywhere from, you know, the $20 figure up to $50. They last a while. The products last a while. You can use them for relief and recovery. So you can use them for pain purposes. You can use them for helping you to sleep a little bit better. A lot of people use CBD oil for that purpose. So if you have trouble sleeping, then you can use it for that, kind of calm you down, get you to sleep a little bit easier. They have an extra strength version line. So it has a little bit more CBD in it. So if it doesn't quite work for you at the given levels, you can have a product with a little bit more for a little bit more money. And it's all done out of a plant that the company has created. Sagely Naturals has created. They do a great job. It's easy to access online. And I should answer this because this is probably your inevitable question if you're not too in tune with this. Is CBD legal? And yes, it is. In every state of the union, it is absolutely fine to use CBD. Even if marijuana is illegal where you are, CBD is fine. So if you go to sagelynaturals.com, check out the products for yourself. You can also order a little sampler box. They'll send you a little box like I got. And you can have a bunch of different products to try. So you can try the pills, you can try the cream, you can try the roll-on, you can try the sleep, you can try the relief and recovery, whatever kind of mixture, and you can see for yourself. And that's all I can advise you to do. As someone who has used the kind of icy hot creams when I play golf, when I get back pain, or has used like tapes and stuff, I don't like any of that, to be honest. The icy hot stuff smells awful, and it makes me smell bad all day. I don't like the tape stuff because I have hairy legs, so when I pull it off, that is a nightmare. The CBD is perfect. It rolls on, it smells good, it works quick. I can move on with my life. So check out SageleyNaturals.com. Find out for yourself. Would love to hear your feedback. If you're a CBD user or if you're a Sagely Naturals customer, let me know at Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. Okay, last thing for this week. I want to focus on the slow play situation here a little bit, just a little bit, because the European Tour has come out with a new policy just today. Came out August 19th. And they're going to implement it in 2020. They're going to trial it at the BMW PGA Championship, which is moved from May to September to kind of take advantage of the changed PGA Tour schedule. And the basic tenets are, they're kind of four tenets of it, but the ideas are, hey, we're going to penalize you sooner if you have a bad time while you are on the clock, while you're out of position. So second bad time in a round while you're on the clock, that's one stroke penalty, then and there, no conversation about it. That's akin to the PGA Tour strategy. They've done that for a number of years, except they don't really give strokes, and they almost never have a second bad time. The fines have also basically been tripled for amassing bad times throughout the year. So you may not get two bad times in a round to get a stroke, but if you amass a bunch of bad times to earn a penalty, it used to be, I think, 9,000 euro or 9,000 sterling. Now it will be 26,000 euro sterling. I think it's euro. And that's a substantial increase, obviously, to go from, cost of doing business to, for a lot of guys on a tour where most of the purses that aren't co-sanctioned are 1 million euro to 3 million euro. That's big money. That means something. And then they're going to have different check-in points throughout the round where you'll be able to see as a player how you're doing time-wise, per shot, keeping time par as a group, all of the relevant statistical data that you need to know whether you're playing quickly enough or not. They're also going to reduce the amount of time that you have to be able to play a shot when you are not on the clock. So it used to be like 100 seconds, which seems absurd, by the way. Now it's going to be 80 seconds. So that's a little bit of a reduction. That means something. Again, that counts for something. That's moving it forward a little bit. And then, most importantly, I think, other than the strokes, is European Tour rules officials will be able to time players and look at players even if they are not out of position. And they will be able to effectively profile players who are known slow play offenders. So they can go to a slow player and go, hey buddy, I know you're slow, I'm timing you now. Make sure you hit it, otherwise you're going to get a stroke. Love it. I love what the European Tour is trying to do. They're trying to take what they've learned, they're trying to take what their player feedback is, and they're trying to do something about slow play. We will find out over the course of next season whether that actually helps. And the European Tour is generally fairly transparent about their things that work or do not work. And they will tell you with their full gorilla chest if things are working. And if they're not, then they will just quietly get rid of it, like the shot clock masters. So they will be the guinea pig probably for the PGA Tour. Not that the PGA Tour wants to copy the European Tour. They hate acknowledging the European Tour does anything right or that it even exists in some cases. But if the PGA Tour can find out from the European Tour that, hey, if we post the times, we give these guys a screen or a tablet screen or whatever to tell them when they're going quickly enough, when they're not going quickly enough, maybe it will encourage them to play faster. If we enable our referees to go up to players who are known slow play violators and go, I am timing you. This is a spot check. Make sure they get it right. Keep it moving. I think that means something. We got to try stuff. Because I don't know what the PGA Tour is going to come up with at the Northern Trust. They announced after all the Bryson DeChambeau mess that they were going to look into potentially changing the pace of play policy, that they would include some measures around timing players or the ability to penalize players who are playing slow, even if their group was on pace against time par. That's a good thing. Now the European Tour is taking it a step further and saying, hey, we're going to do something about it. Here's what we're going to try. We're going to try it next season. We'll change it as needed. Kudos to Keith Pelley for coming up with that with his tournament committee and deciding here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this a little bit better, and we're going to try it for the fast players. We're going to try and do something to help them for once after 30 or 40 years of not acknowledging fast players and just making them play to the pace of the slower players, the more methodical ones. Now we're going to do something to go the other way. That's a good thing. Hopefully it makes a better TV product. Hopefully it makes it better to watch. Hopefully it makes it better to enjoy in person, because TV has always got the ability to move from player to player, shot to shot. They can hide the fact that golf shots can take a long time and maybe take too long to hit. But what happened with Bryson DeChambeau is that he was in a feature group on PGA Tour Live. He was exposed because there are no commercials on PGA Tour Live. So when he took a long time, an inordinately long time to hit an 8-foot putt that didn't hit the hole, took 2 minutes and 8 seconds and 3 looks of his green book to miss the hole, that meant something. When it took him 3 minutes to pace off a 70-yard shot and then hit it kind of lousy, that meant something. So I think that maybe unintentional, maybe intentional, I don't know. Maybe the PGA Tour wanted to do this. But that way of exposing Bryson DeChambeau as a slow player, which we all kind of knew, but made it really explicit for golf fans, by doing that through their own coverage network, through PGA Tour Live, now we have an idea of what slow play really looks like and what that can mean for a fan on TV, what that can mean for a fan in person, what that means for a competitor. Think about Justin Thomas, who was looking at his imaginary watch trying to figure out when Bryson DeChambeau was going to hit a freaking putt. That was great. And I think all of those things kind of piled up, and now we're going to get somewhere with this. And the European Tour is leading the way. Kudos to them for doing it. I cannot wait to see more and more data about this. And I think they're going to be proactive about it. They typically are. I hope that they are. I hope that they will kind of take the reins here from the PGA Tour and say, look, we're doing something about this. Now you do something about it. And then bring it to the market. Maybe in WGCs, maybe some other way. But give us a proving ground to figure out if it's going to work here in the United States. All right. That's going to do it for us this week. I am actually heading down to Washington, D.C. right after this. I'm going to be recording an interview with National Public Radio out in New York City, down in a D.C. studio for one of their podcasts. I'll tell you more about that on social media. I can't wait to do it. Very excited. I don't think I've been on NPR before, or if I have, it's not been for very long. So this should be a pretty interesting thing. I can't wait to check it out, and I can't wait for you to check it out as well. This week, we obviously have the Tour Championship. We have other big tournaments. We've got the Albertsons Boise Open, the Korn Ferry Finals, so always worth watching that. Canadian Pacific Women's Open, one of the best tournaments on the LPGA. Always fun to watch. Love the Canadian spirit about golf. It is better than this country. Then we've got the Scandinavian Invitational on the European Tour, what's been the KLM Open, all kinds of other things over the years. Nordea Masters, KLM Masters, should be great. Pretty solid top-tier field for the players who aren't in the Tour Championship, but are European Tour regulars. And then we have the Boeing Classic on PGA Tour Champions. By the way, shout out Doug Barron. Doug Barron, I talked to 10 years ago, basically, about his PGA Tour suspension for being the first guy under the anti-doping program to get popped. He sued the tour. He eventually won that lawsuit. He was given a therapeutic use exemption. His suspension was effectively commuted. And he had been in the wilderness for basically 7 or 8 years. He qualified for the Senior Open Championship, finished in the top five. Monday qualified for the Dick's Sporting Goods Open last week in Endicott, New York, and then went wire to freaking wire and won the thing. Now he has PGA Tour champion status. He won $307,500 last Sunday. I cannot believe that. One of the coolest stories of the year. Big year for Monday qualifiers between Barron, Corey Connors, in the Texas Open. He's going to the Tour Championship. So many more. It's really just a fascinating time to see how deep golf really is and how hard it is to make it to those kinds of levels, to get those kinds of special days like Doug Barron, Corey Connors, and others have enjoyed this year. Going from qualifier to champion is a big, big deal in high-level golf. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks so much for listening to us. Please give us a 5-star review if you check us out on iTunes. If you want to talk to me about the show, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, or hit me up on Twitter @RyanBallenge. And thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week.